지금 살해된 인물이 김정남이 확실시 된다라고 판단을 하고 있습니다.
The translation: Another arrest made following the death of the North Korean leader's half brother. It's Friday, February 17th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Log on right now to Facebook at VOA Asia for a greater program experience. Also ahead, Indonesians in Jakarta will vote again. We meet the nominee for U.S. Ambassador to China, an assessment of North Korea's weapons program, and giving birth is dangerous. We step out into the world right now on VOA Asia. Police in Malaysia said Thursday they have arrested a third person in connection with the apparent assassination of a half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. South Korea Wednesday confirmed the victim. It seems assured that the person who was killed was Kim Jong-nam, said Jong Jun-hee, the South Korean Unification Ministry spokesman. Kim Jong-nam was once in line to become the head of state, but fell out of favor with their father, Kim Jong-il, after he tried to enter Japan on a forged passport to visit Tokyo Disneyland in 2001. There is widespread speculation that Kim Jong-nam's death was ordered by high-ranking officials in Pyongyang and very likely by Kim Jong-un.
또한 만약 김정남 피살이
If it is proved that Kim Jong-nam's death was committed by the North Korean government, it will be a case that shows the brutality and inhumanity of the Kim Jong-un regime, says South Korean acting president and prime minister Hwang Kyo-an. Kim Jong-nam was reportedly considered a threat to his brother's rule, and there was speculation that Chinese President Xi Jinping would prefer to see him replace his younger brother as the leader of North Korea. South Korea's spy agency said Wednesday that Kim Jong-un had issued a standing order for his half-brother's assassination and that there had been a failed attempt in 2012. North Korean defector and analyst An Chan-il, with the World Institute for North Korean Studies, said it is likely that North Korean spies, embedded within the large number of laborers that work in Malaysia's mineral and mining industry, had learned of the older brother Kim's travel plans and decided to target him while he was outside of China's protection.
그런 근로자들 속에
I think North Korea may have put spies within these laborers, and while the two women are suspected to be members of the North's Reconnaissance Bureau, it is highly possible that more than 10 people belong to other bureaus that may be involved in this case, says An Chan-il. The South Korean government on Wednesday also urged all North Korean defectors to take extra precautions for their own safety and security. Yumi Kim, Bill Ide, Joyce Huang, and Ron Corbin, along with the VOA Korean Service, contributed to this report, which you may find in its entirety on voanews.com. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. North Korean alleged assassination resembles a mafia hit. Jakarta prisoners enthusiastically join local elections. Philippine president asked to release bank account details. Thai forces ring temple in standoff over Buddhist monk. Mongolian herders face a crisis. Red Cross appeals for aid. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues as the second round election for governor of Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, is set for April 18th. It pits the popular Chinese Christian incumbent, currently on trial for blasphemy, against a moderate Muslim challenger in a race some view as testing the world's largest Muslim-majority nation's racial and religious toleration. Governor Basuki Cahayapurnama won about 43% in the first round of voting Wednesday, while former Education Minister Anies Baswedan took about 40%, with the remaining 17% going to a third candidate, Agus Yudhoyono, the son of the former president who was eliminated. The election has been overshadowed by the trial of Purnama over charges he insulted the Islamic holy book, the Quran, a charge he denies. The case has sparked protests among some Muslim groups. Longtime Indonesian observer Peter McCauley of the Australian National University tells VOA's Victor Beattie there is both good news and bad news for tolerance in the world's largest Muslim democracy.
The good news is that the most controversial candidate, Basuki, who is often called Ahok in Jakarta, who is a Christian Chinese, did just as well as expected, and maybe even a bit better than expected, because he's been under very strong attack. The bad news is, as it were, in terms of tolerance and so on, although it's not too bad, is that one of his other candidates is very close. This is Anis Baswedan. Anis is a former minister. Anis is a moderate Islamic candidate. They're really neck and neck. Now, the third candidate, Agus, who is the son of the former president of Indonesia, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, often called SBY, he has not done very well. He's got less than 20%. So in a runoff, he will be eliminated.
What is the status of his blasphemy trial?
For the time being, it's being held over. Further judgment is due sometime in a month or so. If Ahok actually wins the election and is governor, then the case will be pressed and he might be held up for further trial. He might even be found guilty. So it's a very mixed situation. The law and the politics here are intimately mixed up. This is the capital city, Jakarta, of the world's largest Islamic country. There has been a surprisingly strong vote, really, for Christian Chinese. It's amazing, really, in a way. And the candidate who may well come up and win, Anis Baswedan, is certainly not an extremist or anything like that. He's a very moderate sort of person with a good reputation. He was Minister for Education and Culture and regarded as a quite reasonable minister. Overall, there has been the Jakarta population have voted for a moderate and tolerant point of view. And really what they have voted for in giving such a strong vote to the Christian Chinese candidate, Ahok, they have voted for results in government. Ahok has a reputation for rolling up his sleeve and getting things done. And in some ways, he's made enemies because he's a can-do, I'm-going-to-solve-it person.
Peter McCauley said Ahok's strong showing underscores the appreciation of many voters for competence in government. He also enjoys the backing of Indonesia's popular president, Joko Widodo. Yet McCauley said Islam will play a role, and it's quite possible that Baswedan will ultimately prevail. Happening now in Asia, South Korea's Constitutional Court announced its plan to end the impeachment trial of President Park Geun-hye by February 24th. It did not say when a decision would be announced. The special prosecutor said it would seek to extend its investigation past February 28th. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you join us today on VOA Asia. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad has been tapped by President Donald Trump to be the U.S. ambassador to China, which may be one of the president's most savvy selections. Branstad is one of the most towering figures in Republican politics. He is the longest-serving governor in the United States. Branstad's relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping goes back for decades, and it's one of the most unique in international politics. On his long path to the presidency, China's Xi Jinping visited rural Iowa in 1985. That's when Branstad was in his first term as governor. Xi Jinping came again in 2012 when Branstad was also governor. A growing China has been gobbling up Iowa's corn and soybean production for the past decade. VOA Mandarin reporters wanted to get to know Governor Branstad better, should he be confirmed, and head on to Beijing.
Mr. Governor, President Trump used to say that no one knows trade better than you. So, in your opinion, what are the most crucial issues in trade between U.S. and China?
We sell a lot of Iowa products like soybeans and pork in China. We've seen the growth in trade, but I think it's really built on friendship and trust. So I hope we can overcome some of the differences by working together and trying to work out a situation that can be a win-win for both countries. Mr. Trump wrote a book called The Art of the Deal, and the best deals are deals where both sides see it as a win-win. So that's what I hope I can help with. I think the benefit that I have is a long-standing friendship with the people of China, and especially with Xi Jinping, the president of China. He came here to Iowa in my first term as governor in 1985. So we've had a long-standing friendship.
Do you think President Trump's policy is going to create obstacles in U.S.-China trade relations?
Well, obviously, he was elected because he wants to improve America's economic success and create more jobs here and grow the American economy. But I think there's an opportunity for us to work out things in a way that can be beneficial to both the United States and to China, and that's the role that I want to play. And I think he recognizes, because of my longstanding friendship with China, that I'm a person that can be helpful to him in his endeavors to do that.
You have been the governor of Iowa for over 20 years.
23 years, yeah.
23 years. So when you moved to China for this post, what would you miss most about Iowa?
Well, I think it's the people. I go to every county in Iowa every year. I love this state. I grew up on a farm, so I really know Iowa and love Iowa. But, you know, the neat thing is when Xi Jinping came to America the first time he came to Iowa, and Iowans treated him so well that he also loves Iowa and the people of Iowa, and he calls us old friends. So I'm hopeful that relationship can also help us improve the relations between China and the United States of America.
Some people describe you as humble, and some people describe you as ambitious. Do you think they're in conflict, and which one is more accurate?
Well, to be governor, you have to be ambitious. But I'm a humble Iowa farm kid. Last night, I was with Henry Tippie celebrating his 90th birthday. He's a very successful man in the business school. The University of Iowa is named after him. But he's, we were talking about this. He's another Iowa farmer. He grew up on a farm, had a lot of responsibility in an early age, and he's a very humble man, but very successful. So I think, you know, it's important. Iowans appreciate humility and hard work. And I think this is where we've made, you know, and Xi Jinping has had that throughout his life as well. He had to go out in the country and work very hard, and he understands agriculture. So I think we have some things in common, and I'm hopeful that will be helpful to our countries.
What do you think is your advantage and disadvantage serving as the U.S. ambassador to China?
Well, being the ambassador is an opportunity for me to go to China, where people know and really recognize that I'm a friend of China, so I think that's an asset. The challenge is different people, different cultures, and we need to find ways to work together.
What would be your priority during your ambassadorship to China?
Well, the priority for me is to grow the economy and to bring more jobs to Iowa, increase exports, but also to help China continue to grow and prosper as well.
Thank you, Mr. Governor, for taking our interview.
Donald Trump's pick for U.S. Ambassador to China, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, in conversation with VOA's Mandarin service.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The office of Myanmar's president said a former lieutenant colonel is suspected of paying his older brother about $74,000 to murder prominent lawyer Ko Ni. The government based its conclusion on surveillance video, text messages, and his brother's testimony. This and other stories are on Asia in a Minute with Steve Miller, found on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia continues. Ever-growing international sanctions in response to repeated North Korean missile tests seems to be a never-ending cycle, a process that appears to have no effect on the trajectory of North Korean Kim Jong-un's nuclear ambitions. The East-West Institute's Jonathan Miller and the Center for the National Interest share their thoughts with VOA Asia's Steve Miller.
After two nuclear tests and multiple missile launches in 2016, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un tested Sunday a new intermediate-range missile. The rocket flew about 500 kilometers before splashing down in international waters between South Korea and Japan. The missile is believed to have used solid fuel, a type that would make future launches more difficult to detect. The United Nations Security Council met Monday at the request of South Korea, Japan, and the United States. The 15-member council unanimously condemned the launch. North Korea rejected the UN statement, saying the test was defensive in nature. So, will the Security Council's latest rebuke make a difference in how North Korea behaves? Harry Kazianis, the director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest, on Skype says,
"The North Koreans are very afraid of imposed regime change by the United States or an outside power. They are extremely afraid that the United States someday will make the determination, as in the case in Iraq or Afghanistan or Libya, that it is time to impose some sort of regime change. So this is why you can have all the UN Security Council resolutions that you want. You can have the toughest language that you want. Quite frankly, it's not going to work."
East Asia fellow Jonathan Miller from the East-West Institute on Skype also says,
"You know, within the past 6 years or so, the North has conducted so many missile tests and nuclear tests with little to change their strategic calculus. This kind of a statement from the UN Security Council, while welcome, I don't think that's going to be fundamentally change the course for Pyongyang."
A goal of the international community has been to create an environment where North Korea pursues denuclearization. Is there sufficient international pressure for Kim Jong-un to abandon that goal? Kazianis again.
"I can see almost no scenario where North Korea gives up its nuclear weapons program. North Korea is hopelessly outmanned and outgunned. The only thing that brings sort of an equalizer to the situation is North Korea's, quite frankly, crude nuclear weapons program."
While North Korea may not abandon its goals for the foreseeable future, there are other unknowns. Jonathan Miller again.
"I think the wild card here is how the Trump administration will approach the North. I don't really believe they have that figured out yet. You can kind of clearly see that the U.S. really hasn't really fully articulated its thoughts on how it will approach North Korea."
If North Korea won't abandon its programs, how should the international community respond? Harry Kazianis.
"Well, I think there's two things we can do. I think the first thing that you have to do is you really have to try and isolate and limit the capabilities of that North Korean nuclear program with the missiles that it would use. So the way to do that is to increase missile defense rapidly and robustly, not only in South Korea with that, but also with Japan. The second thing I think we need to do, and I think this is actually more important than the first, is to start talking with the North Koreans. You know, we don't want to get into a situation where we have these endless cycles of North Korean missile testing, endless cycles of North Korean nuclear weapons testing, because eventually one of these tests could go wrong and it could cost people's lives. And that's how wars start."
I'm Steve Miller.
This topic and more covered in our weekly Asia Weekly program, found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Developing at this hour in Asia, India's government is creating a steering committee to find out if cow urine can cure cancer. The committee will review cow research proposals, recommend funding to the Ministry of Science and Technology as they aim to create a national coordinated effort on cow-related research. VOA keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Nine countries where giving birth are dangerous for both mothers and their babies, and they've decided to improve the odds of survival. VOA's Carol Pearson reports these countries, two in Asia and seven in sub-Saharan Africa, have plans for improving the care pregnant women and their babies get, as well as the health facilities where they give birth.
In the delivery room, this is the sound you want to hear. It means a baby can breathe. If fluid fills the baby's airway, trained staff can clear it and save a baby's life. In a healthcare facility with electricity and running water, doctors and trained attendants can give a woman a life-saving blood transfusion if she bleeds heavily after giving birth. They can also perform a cesarean section if needed, which can increase the chances of survival for both mother and infant. In some countries, hospitals don't always have electricity or running water. or enough trained midwives or nurses to save women and babies when things go wrong.
In the year 2016, we have almost 6 million children under the age of 5 years that lose their life. And also we have almost 300,000 women that lose their life due to complication of childbirth.
Dr. Flavia Bustreo spoke to VOA by Skype. She is leading a team at the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and 9 Asian and African countries to improve health care for mothers, infants, and children, to make sure every pregnant woman receives good care throughout her pregnancy, delivery, and post-pregnancy period, and that all babies get quality care before, during, and after birth. Bustreo says the risk is greatest for mothers around the time of delivery. For babies, the risk of dying is greatest in the first few days of life. Some of the work means convincing women to have their babies in a birthing facility. The countries involved will create their own plans to achieve these goals.
The dynamics that we are trying to create is to have the partners and players within each country to create their targets so that they own those targets and they are also responsible and accountable to their own population for delivery.
The goal is ultimately to end preventable deaths of mothers and babies. But first, the 9 countries aim to cut maternal and infant death in half within the next 5 years. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
We thank you so much for joining us today and listening to VOA Asia. So many ways to hear us. You can do that on Facebook through VOA Asia. Of course, we stream on our website all the time at voanews.com. You know what? We're also a podcast. Try downloading it and take VOA Asia with you. Special thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao, and our great VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast, President Donald Trump said our republic was formed on the basis that freedom is not a gift from government, but that freedom is a gift from God. One fundamental freedom, freedom of religion, includes the freedom to worship according to one's own beliefs. Freedom of religion is a sacred right, said President Trump. But it is also a right under threat all around us, and the world is under serious, serious threat in so many different ways. We have seen unimaginable violence carried out in the name of religion, acts of wanton slaughter against religious minorities, horrors on a scale that defy description. Terrorism is a fundamental threat to religious freedom. It must be stopped, and it will be stopped. We have seen peace-loving Muslims brutalized, victimized, murdered, and oppressed by Islamic State terrorists. We have seen threats of extermination against the Jewish people. We have seen a campaign of ISIS and genocide against Christians, where they cut off heads, said President Trump. All nations have a moral obligation to speak out against such violence. All nations have a duty to work together to confront it and to confront it viciously if we have to, said President Trump. The United States will do everything in its power to defend and protect religious liberty in our land. America must forever remain a tolerant society, said President Trump, where all faiths are respected and where all our citizens can feel safe and secure. As long as our liberty, and in particular our religious liberty, is allowed to flourish, said President Trump, America will flourish.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.